Scientists say yes to Pluto, and Smart One goes out with a bang this week on Planetary Radio. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Public Radio's travel show that takes you to the final frontier. I'm Matt Kaplan. To be a planet or not to be a planet? That remains the question this week as we talk to the leader of a campaign to reject the new definition reached by the International Astronomical Union. Mark Sykes got over 300 prominent planetary scientists to sign his petition. He'll tell us why and what the next step is. Then we'll relive last week's lunar smackdown by the Smart One orbiter as we take you behind the scenes at the European Space Agency. All that, and the winners, yes, winners, of our Planetary Definition Humor Contest in this week's edition of What's Up with Bruce Betts. The big news this week is just 200 miles or so above your head.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, three main engines up and burning, 2, 1, and liftoff of Space Shuttle Atlantis, opening a new chapter in the completion of the International Space Station for the collaboration of nations in space.
It's the first time in 4 years Atlantis has gone to orbit. The shuttle is carrying 6 astronauts and a big new truss laden with solar panels that will be bolted on to the ISS. We've got a detailed article about the mission at planetary.org. There's also a story out of the University of Colorado that says up to a third of the other solar systems we've discovered so far may have Earth-like planets. No, we haven't seen them, of course, but we have detected big Jupiter-like bodies circling close to the central star. In their computer simulation, scientists found that these behemoths may encourage the formation of smaller rocky planets with oceans, no less. What happens when the New Horizons probe finishes its work in the Pluto system? That's a question for Emily Lakdawalla. I'll be right back with Mark Sykes.
Hi, I'm Emily Lakdawalla with Questions and Answers. A listener asked, will New Horizons go into true interstellar space? If it does, when will it be farther away than the Voyagers? After it flies by Pluto, nothing will stop New Horizons. It will go on to explore 2 or 3 objects in the Kuiper Belt, and after its death it will still be traveling at such speed that the gravity of the Sun will not be sufficient to cause it to return. As a result, New Horizons will become the 5th spacecraft to travel into interstellar space. The other interstellar spacecraft are Pioneer 10 and 11 and Voyager 1 and 2. Many people have heard the fact reported that New Horizons was the fastest spacecraft ever launched, so it's widely assumed that it will pass by the Voyagers someday. In fact, it's unlikely that New Horizons will ever pass the Voyagers. How can this be? Stay tuned to Planetary Radio to find out.
Mark Sykes was not a happy planetary scientist after the meeting of the International Astronomical Union in late August. He soon discovered he had lots of company. As director of the Planetary Science Institute in Tucson, Arizona, he was in a position to do something about it. Within a few days, he had posted a petition rejecting the new definition of a planet that the IAU had decreed. I talked to him just a few days ago about this ongoing controversy. Mark Sykes, we reported on your petition last week on the show. Tell us a little bit more about that, how that got started, and the current status.
Well, it got started because the definition that was ultimately passed by the IAU in Prague did not take into account any of the characteristics of planets that the majority of people that study them are looking at. When we talk about what's a planetary object, you know, we often discuss its atmosphere, surface structures that reveal interior processes, magnetic fields that reveal even deeper processes going on in the objects. But the IAU decided to take a very narrow, kind of parochial view of the term that focuses just on the effects of objects on other objects, you know, a dynamical term.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was terribly inadequate, and also the way they phrased it, talking about clearing the neighborhood of an orbit, you know, they weren't defining their terms, and so that leads to confusion as to whether Jupiter, with its clouds of Trojan asteroids straddling its orbit, is strictly a planet under their definition, which you can imagine will be the bane of high school teachers into the future as they try to teach to this type of a thing, assuming it was broadly adopted. Oh, and also another problem with this definition was that it depends on where you are. That is, you need to be, a planet needs to be more and more massive the further away it gets from the sun in order to be considered a planet under their definition. So if you're to take a Mars, for instance, which I don't think that anybody would have any problem considering as a planet, shifted it, say, out to the Kuiper Belt, it wouldn't be a planet at all under their definition. In fact, if you were to shift it just a half an astronomical unit further away from the sun, it wouldn't be considered a planet under their definition. So there's some really serious conceptual problems with it, pedagogical problems, and scientific problems with it in terms of the narrowness of its usage. And for a term that's so broadly used by people, you know, that kind of very, very hyper-narrow focus is does a disservice both to the public and to the community. And the controversy, of course, surrounding it has done a lot to bring some discredit to astronomers and to science in general. So this petition that we started up protests the definition that was adopted. It was signed by more than 300 planetary scientists and astronomers, and when you look at the list of people who signed it, you know, we has world-class experts in about every area of planetary science, as well as people who have been involved in the exploration of the solar system, from missions as far back as Mariner to the missions that are currently flying today and plan for the near future. And we're saying that we can't use this. We're not going to use it. We need something better. The IAU, unfortunately, has kind of made its bed because they're unable to take any more action on this for 3 years until 2009 under their own rules. But fortunately, you know, given modern communication technology, the scientific community is not so constrained, and we are planning to have a broader discussion, an international discussion on planetary characteristics, with the idea of, you know, ultimately addressing the issue of what's a better definition for this, and then how would it play out? And it should be something that extends not only to our own solar system, but to the 200 planets that we know about around other stars, as well as to what we expect that we might be finding in our own solar system and elsewhere in the future.
Mark, your associate, Alan Stern, who, of course, is principal investigator on the New Horizons mission to Pluto, pointed out you may have had more astronomers sign your petition than voted for this in the IAU General Assembly.
Well, I wasn't in Prague, so I can't speak to that. And the point wasn't to get into some kind of a shouting contest or to say that we got more votes than you got. My understanding is that there was, you know, maybe 50 or 60 planetary people in the room, but I don't know how many, you know, 400, 500 people total there were in the room out of the 2,700 people that showed up to the conference at the beginning. But the point is just that given the breadth and depth of the knowledge of the people who have signed this, that it brings into question the credibility of the IAU action, and really speaks to the need of doing the process over again more openly, with greater participation, with a broader contextual basis, and the IAU can catch up later.
Mark, we had Mike Brown of Caltech on this show a couple of weeks ago, and while a piece of him that could have been declared the discoverer of Planet 10 was a bit disappointed, he seemed to be okay with this definition, and now, I was on his website just last night, he seems to be coming around to the idea of not even necessarily a scientific definition, and he compares it to the definition of a continent, which he says no geologist would try and come up with a scientific definition. Is it your goal to come up with one that is grounded in good science, or are you...
Absolutely. That is our intention. We can have a good, open, scientific discussion that results in a definition that has more scientific merit, broader scientific merit than was passed in Prague. And frankly, I think the public deserves to be able to see and even you know, ask questions and participate in this discussion, because we would be laying out what we know about our own solar system, what we know about planets around other stars, as well as these future discoveries that we anticipate to make.
Mark, I'll have to stop you there because we are out of time, but I hope that we can return to you as we will return to this topic and get further updates and also have a conversation once this controversy dies down about the Planetary Science Institute.
I'd love to.
Thanks very much. Mark Sykes is the director of the Planetary Science Institute in Tucson, Arizona. A recap of Smart One's September 1st impact on the moon. That's in 1 minute when Planetary Radio continues.
This is Buzz Aldrin. When I walked on the moon, I knew it was just the beginning of humankind's great adventure in the solar system. That's why I'm a member of the Planetary Society, the world's largest space interest group. The Planetary Society is helping to explore Mars. We're tracking near-Earth asteroids and comets. We sponsor the search for life on other worlds, and we're building the first ever solar sail.
We didn't just build it. We attempted to put that first solar sail in orbit, and we're going to try again. You can read about all our exciting projects and get the latest space exploration news in depth at the Society's exciting and informative website, planetary.org. You can also preview our full-color magazine, The Planetary Report. It's just one of our many member benefits. Want to learn more? Call us at 1-877-PLANETS. That's toll-free, 1-877-752-6387. The Planetary Society, exploring new worlds.
Welcome back to Planetary Radio. I'm Matt Kaplan. We told you about the successful impact of the Smart One Lunar Orbiter last week, even though it happened just minutes before that show was put together. With a bit more time now, we want to let you in on special coverage that only international media representatives heard last week. The Planetary Society pulled together a teleconference with a direct connection to the European Space Operations Center, or ESOC. Our own Bruce Betts moderated the discussion with Dr. Detlef Koshny, a Smart One scientist. Dr. Koshny joined Bruce and the reporters just before the violent climax.
I'm currently in Germany at our control center in Darmstadt, where we follow the last minutes in the orbit of Smart One, and we are expecting it to impact in 5 minutes on the moon's surface.
So how is the mood there in ESOC, and what is the time you expect the impact exactly right now?
The impact time is expected for 7:42 our time, so that's 5:42 universal time, and you do the conversion yourself. It's in 5 minutes exactly. The mood here is great. It's excited. We weren't sure whether we'd impact maybe an orbit earlier. I mean, flight dynamics told us we wouldn't, but there's always some uncertainty. So we were all very tense 5 hours ago, but nothing happened there as predicted. So now we really expect something to happen, namely the carrier signal of the downlink of the spacecraft to simply stop. And yeah, I guess then we'll all applaud, even though it's the end of the mission. I hope that there is some ground-based observers there, and they would be in Southern America, that have a telescope and watch the area and have clear skies, and maybe they see an impact flash.
All right. Well, here's hoping. Good luck to you, and we'll talk to you in a few minutes.
All right. Good. Bye-bye.
And it was just moments later that we got confirmation of the impact. Detlef Koshny called back with a report from Germany.
So tell us, what happened?
Well, suddenly we lost the signal of the spacecraft, and it was exactly at 5 hours, 42 minutes, 19 point something seconds. I forgot the fractions of the second. And yeah, indeed, people applauded. So everybody was happy. The mission ended as predicted, as planned.
Well, congratulations on a successful mission and a successful end to mission.
Yep, thank you very much. So basically now we are waiting here, and people just behind me are trying to downlink the images, and I get a thumb up, so we have the last images taken just before the impact here, and we'll show them soon to the public.
Excellent. How close to impact were the last images taken?
They were actually just about 5 minutes to the impact point, and the main driver there was that basically the impact is on the dark side of the moon, whereas the camera is built to image the bright side. So we pointed towards the bright part of the moon and took images until, well, as late as possible.
Great. Why don't we try to take some questions? So go ahead.
This is Hazlett, New Scientist here. I'm just wondering, are there any indications so far of what happened during the impact, or is there basically no information about that yet?
So far, we just know that the impact did occur because of the loss of the signal. And what, of course, is now interesting is the question, were there any ground-based observers that were able to see it? And I'm monitoring my email, so I'm collecting all the information from amateur observers. And so far, I haven't really received anything except of information that it was cloudy where people observed. So we still have to wait. And basically, there is some predictions on how bright the impact flash are, would be, what kind of chemical elements would be released. We don't know until we get data from the ground-based observers. So this will take a few minutes, up to hours, depending on how long they need to process their data. What you expect, or what we expect after this or during this impact, is a combination of thermal emission, such as black body radiation, which from the temperature that you would expect from such an impact would be mainly in the infrared. So it's just black body radiation, which you would pick up. And then we have hydrazin on board, or we had hydrazin on board. I have to talk in the past tense. And that sends out emission lines. I don't precisely recall the wavelengths of these, but there were also some in the infrared. So that's why we encouraged large telescopes with spectroscopy, or with the capability to do spectroscopy, to monitor the impact. And I know, like, IRTF on Hawaii was monitoring the moon. We don't have any confirmation yet of whether they saw the flash.
Is there any indication that the spacecraft did indeed hit at the nominal impact point?
Yes, the impact point is related to the time, and the time of the impact, let's see, okay, I don't have the predicted number here out of the top of my head, but I think it was within 2 seconds, so we are really close to what they predicted.
All right. Well, thank you. We certainly appreciate you connecting with us from Europe. And by all means, if you have anything else that happens of interest, feel free to give us another call back.
Okay. Well, thanks for letting me share this fantastic stuff with you guys there, and all the best.
It's very, very exciting. All the best to you and the whole Smart One team.
Bruce Betts of the Planetary Society with Detlef Koshny, a Smart One mission scientist. You can read much more about Smart One at our website, planetary.org. I'll be back with Bruce and the winners of our Planetary Definition Humor Contest right after this return visit from Emily.
I'm Emily Lakdawalla, back with Q&A. If New Horizons was the fastest spacecraft ever launched, how is it that it will never surpass the Voyager's distance from the sun? It's because the Voyagers received more boosts after their launches than New Horizons will. New Horizons did leave Earth after launching faster than any other spacecraft to date, having launched about 4% faster than the previous record holder, Ulysses. And New Horizons will receive one further burst of speed during its flyby of Jupiter in 2007. However, both Voyagers also received gravity assist from Jupiter, and because they both flew closer to Jupiter than New Horizons will, their gravity assists were larger. In addition, both Voyagers also received boosts from Saturn flybys, and Voyager 2 went on to further flybys of Uranus and Neptune. The Uranus flyby sped it up, but the Neptune one actually slowed it down. New Horizons, on the other hand, gets only one more close flyby of Pluto. And Pluto's mass is so tiny that it will be unlikely to add enough speed to New Horizons to allow it ever to overtake either of the Voyagers. Got a question about the universe? Send it to us at planetaryradio@planetary.org. And now here's Matt with more Planetary Radio.
Time for a special edition of What's Up
with
Bruce Betts, the director of projects for the Planetary Society. We are so excited because we're going to laugh today like we don't usually. No, we've got those entries that actually did make us laugh, quite a few of them. People who wrote in with their attempt to be humorous about the planet definition controversy. And so we're going to get to that. But take it, Bruce. What have we got up in the sky?
Pretty simple looking planet-wise these days. Check out Jupiter in the evening sky, looking like the brightest star-like object over there in the southwest in the early evening. Can't miss it. If you have a chance, pull out that small telescope or even some steadily held binoculars and check out the little points of light on either side of Jupiter. Those are Jupiter's big moons, the Galilean satellites. You can also see, speaking of good telescope objects, Saturn rising higher and higher in the pre-dawn sky in the east. So before dawn, look in the east. It'll be looking a little bit yellowish and look like a bright star for all of you who live in the South Atlantic Ocean. You
like Flipper.
Will have an option to see, or people on cruises will have an option to see an annular solar eclipse. So the moon right in front of the sun, but not blocking out the whole thing. So an annulus appears around the outside. That will be on September 22nd for the somewhat more people who live in portions of, actually most of South America and Western Africa. You'll see it as a partial solar eclipse, that on September 22nd. Random Space Fact!
Oh, that was, I love that one. We might have to run that more. We might have to repeat that.
Glad you recorded it. All right, on Mercury, secondary craters. This is when something slams into Mercury, throws stuff out. They fall closer to the crater than they do on the moon because of the higher gravity. So even though Mercury looks pretty similar, when you start looking at details of craters, they do look different because of the higher gravity. Also different transitions between different styles of crater. But you also get these secondary craters falling closer.
Very good. Okay. Galileo would be proud.
Galileo. Moving on to the trivia contest. Oh, and as you know, this time, instead of the pure trivia contest, we gave you an open-ended challenge to make us laugh with just about anything you could create having to do with the IAU planet decision and Pluto's demotion, among other things. How'd we do, Matt? I know how we did. I already looked at them. They're funny.
You looked over them. You had to help judge, right?
It's okay. True. They're funny.
We have a lot of funny ones. And, you know, as always, when we do these special contests, we wish that we could read all of the ones that made us even smile broadly. But we just don't have time, even though we're going to take a few extra moments during What's Up Today. So we really couldn't decide among the top group very easily at all. We had thought about having, you know, three who would win a prize of some kind, and we actually ended up with four. And we can get started with one that's going to be very difficult to do on the radio because it is an illustration.
A challenge for you as a broadcaster, Matt.
This came from Bettina Forget of Montreal, and she's an artist. She usually works in acrylics, but she did this great image of what is obviously an Olympic athlete with a sort of fake Olympic symbol, the five rings, and it is the dwarf planet tossing contest that will be inaugurated in the next Olympics. And sure enough, the guy is tossing Pluto.
Tossing Pluto and has Xena and Ceres down there at his feet, ready to go for the next toss. So dwarf planet tossing, the latest Olympic sport, thanks to the IAU.
And it's just beautifully done. And, you know, we'll try
it
and
is.
Post
we'll,
it.
We'll post it. We'll try to post it or post a link to it.
Here's one from Timothy Edward Palmer Esquire, from not far away. He's in Orange County, California, right almost next door to us here in Pasadena. We will correct a couple of facts here that he got wrong. Pioneer, the Pioneer spacecraft, carried a representation of our solar system as it sped past Pluto in the 70s, hoping to contact alien civilizations. And, of course, this is the famous one that had the man and the woman holding hands, the anatomically correct that disturbed a few people. But it also does have these images of the planets. Well, Timothy, he suggests that with the demotion of Pluto, NASA should send up a chase vehicle to overtake the Pioneer spacecraft and airbrush out Pluto because it is no longer a planet. We don't want to deceive the aliens.
It's true. The aliens get it. They're going to be totally confused.
They'll look for the wrong solar system, which
I hate that.
May be a bad thing. May not. I don't
That's
know.
That's true. That's true.
But I thought that was very entertaining. All right. Now I got one that I found very entertaining, in spite of the fact that it's from a good friend of mine, John Tim Payne, who was in Philadelphia. He actually works for the newspaper there. And he said, he sent in this nonsense poem. Shall I go ahead with it?
Oh, please do.
Here we go. Planetary poem. Pluto, Bluto, has been a Xena, Kina, Kuiper Keeper. Pluto, Pluto, Wiper, Weeper, solar system, never missed him. Ladies and gentlemen, this from the man who wrote Poetry for Dummies, available at a bookstore near you. I don't know what that's going to do to his book sales.
Pluto, Pluto?
Pluto, Pluto.
Nice.
Pluto, Bluto. Thank you, John.
And moving on to our grand prize winner.
Can we get a drum roll, please? Torsten Zimmer, regular listener, regular entrant. He actually had a couple of entries. We're only going to read one of them. And here it is. It helps if you know the show Nowhere Man, that apparently you do. You know something about.
I am aware of this person who's had his the classic I've had my identity completely stolen from me type thing because someone wants to get a picture I have.
That old saw. Well, here it is, folks. Based on Nowhere Man, here is No More Plan. The date is August 24, 2006. Planet Pluto, a Kuiper Belt object, has his identity erased by a mysterious conspiracy. His wife and his moons don't recognize him. The key to his house doesn't work, and his ATM cards are useless. Astronomers are chasing him, but he doesn't know why, except that it has something to do with a hidden agenda. My name is Planet Pluto, or at least it was. I'm a celestial body. I had it all. A wife, Sharon. Two kids. A career. Still making us laugh. But I know what I must do. Clear the entire neighborhood is proof that my claims are real. I know they are. They have to be. Starring Sharon Stone as Sharon Moon, Mel Gibson as Kaplan, the mad astronomer, which should have been you, really. That's the only flaw with this.
Oh, thank you.
Danny DeVito as Pluto, the dwarf planet. Also starring Betty Bruce as Nyx. And get this.
Not related.
Emily Locked Away Now as Hydra. No More Plan, the season's coolest hit.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's our big
winner.
So
we'll be sending off a T-shirt to Torsten Zimmer and posters to our runners-up in this glorious contest. You enjoyed that, didn't you?
I really did. I really did.
It was fun. It was fun. Thank you for those of you who went to the extra effort to come up with those tidbits and send them in to us. We appreciate it. We will go back to a somewhat more mundane, well, perhaps mundane's not the best choice of words, but a standard question. What two main objects will be visited by the Dawn mission? So this is a NASA mission under construction. Where's it going? Go to planetary.org/radio and find out how to enter.
And get that entry to us by 2 p.m. Pacific time on the 18th of September. September 18, 2 p.m. Pacific. We'll get you into the next contest, and that next T-shirt might be yours. We're out of time.
All right, everybody, go out there, look up the night sky, and think about the glory of paperclips. Thank you, and good night.
Bruce Betts is the director of projects for the Planetary Society and sometimes a humor contest judge here on What's Up. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California. Have a great week, everyone.